Hello and welcome back to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep minute by minute into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I am one of your hosts, Zach.
And I'm Sean.
And today we are joined by a wonderful, wonderful guest. Super excited for this one. Been a long time in the making, and this is going to be a fun week. We are joined by the one, the only Atreides Nuts from Blue Sky, who we will, from here on out, just refer to as Deez for ease of voice. So, Deez, how's it going?
Oh, man. Wow. What an introduction. Can I just say that it's a real pleasure to be here. I'm a big fan of the show, and I was very flattered and excited when you guys slid into my DMs and asked if I wanted to be on a few episodes. So here I am. If I haven't disappointed you on Blue Sky already, hopefully I won't disappoint you further. But if I have, get in line. So.
Yeah. Well, considering our conversations today on Blue Sky, you haven't disappointed us.
So. Yeah, I really enjoyed everyone's contributions to the Bands of Dune.
Honestly, there were some that like popped up that I was just like, why the fuck didn't I think of that?
Oh, they were so good.
Is this something I've missed?
Oh yeah. Well, so you don't go on the internet ever.
No.
So
just to put hundreds of hours of my voice out there.
Well, that's different. You don't go on the internet for fun.
Fair.
You don't go on social media. So yeah. Well, I'm gonna let you. I mean, it was your post, so I'm gonna let you go for
it. Tell people. I think one of the things that's really fun, like, because I don't spend a ton of time like just hovering and doing stuff either, but today it felt like when I dropped the Bands of Dune CHOAM speedwagon joke, that got people really into coming back with their own, and I love that. That's so they really caught me good. Kind of right when I was taking lunch, and so we got like the Siege Boys, what were some of the other ones? Guns and Roses.
Yep.
Earth, Wind, and Spice.
Yeah.
I had Sleeper Token.
Good.
Green Arrakis.
Yep.
And yep. My personal favorite from the list was Sligloaf.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I don't get that reference, but
Meatloaf?
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, yeah. No.
I was going to say, you know Meatloaf, motherfucker.
Sorry. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it was so fun. I mean, Boyz II Fremen. Yeah, it was an unbelievable run. Like, everyone who chimed in. It was just banger after banger after banger.
Lady Jessa Gaga.
Oh, it was so good. Yeah.
I feel like you could just say Sting and it would make sense.
Yeah.
You know, I thought about it and I'm like, no, I'm not going to do it. Easy, I was too. Like, I wanted to do it, but I was like, there's nothing I could do that would be so good it would match Sting emerging from the pod in the steam in the 1984 right. movie. And if I can't match that, I'm not gonna besmirch it by doing something that's less than it deserves.
Fair enough. There's so many more of these since I last looked, like Chair Dog.
But yeah, that one's D-O-double-G. So good. It was so good.
Wow. Yep. Okay.
It was so I'm good. Have to look at yep. this. Yeah, oh, I appreciate. Yeah. I liked. I think my favorite that I did was probably the Rolling Stone Burners.
That's great.
I'm a big J Rays guy. The sooner you can burn my eyes out, the better.
I don't know. I liked so. Lead Carryall.
Dude, they were. That was fun. That was like a perfect like. I don't know. It was probably like half an hour, like while I was taking my lunch break, and I was like, "This is great." Apparently, we were all on at the same time today to just bounce these back and forth.
Oh God!
Well, I gotta say, man, John said it earlier, but I don't spend a lot of time on the socials, but I always enjoy seeing your stuff. It never fails to make me laugh. So.
I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, honestly, at the end of the day, as long as other people are chuckling at it, that's really kind of all I expect or hope for. You know, unless someone wants to sponsor me, in which case I will absolutely shill for corporate money. I am open to that. So,
Well, we have a running ethos here on the Doom Minute podcast that we can be bought. The price is high, but we can be bought, so.
yeah, totally. Yeah,
I
everyone
will
has a
whore
price, I
myself
think.
out for various sugary snacks and or
Yeah.
beds.
Yes.
Totally. Was it Ted DiBiase, the great American philosopher Ted DiBiase, that said everybody has a price? I'm pretty
I'm
sure.
sure. I know the
So
quote. I
yeah.
don't know who said it, but I agree with it.
That's who it was. I know it was a wrestler. Remember which one.
Okay, well,
Any who's will be.
we have an awesome week to get through. This is going to be a fun one. We get some awesome character introductions this week. But first, we have to finish up with an important conversation.
Oh, with where we left off.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Why'd you look at me like that?
Well, I
Jesus
didn't
fucking
know where you
Christ.
were going to go with
Okay.
it.
Well, we are you're hearing stuff that gets cut out now.
Yeah.
Yeah, excellent. The good
So,
stuff, I believe, is the common parlance, yeah.
so we are of course talking about minutes 70 through 71. What other minutes would we be talking about?
What if we just like skipped a week, one week, and then came back the week after doing the 5 minutes before?
I don't think that's confusing enough, because that could just be contributed to a scheduling error.
All right, so we'll go like 4 weeks worth of episodes
I want
forward.
to bounce around random minutes for 1 week.
Honestly, if I may, maybe we spend 1 minute just reading whatever excerpt we have from Jodorowsky's Dune to really throw
Yes.
everybody off.
Holy shit.
Well, so we. Just a little, another little bit behind the scenes here. We started releasing episodes for Dune Part 2 on March 31st.
Okay.
April 1st was a Tuesday, and I floated the idea. We didn't end up doing it, obviously, but I floated the idea of taking a second minute from some unrelated movie and using and using that as our April Fool's Day.
Personally, I love that idea,
If
especially if it's like
it
just a
wasn't
random minute, like not the opening, just like you do like a random minute from the movie Always, and people are like, why are they talking about Richard Dreyfuss and
No,
John
we'll
Goodman
do a
right
minute
now?
of Stand By Me where
Yeah,
they find the
but see, the thing is, we would have to come up with back jokes that we would
Yeah.
like in jokes and everything that we'd have to reference.
Yeah, no,
Oh my
it'd be too
God.
much.
I love this idea so much. I will say there was a small part of me. I was like, do I want to do the math and see if I'm getting to do minute 69? And then
Just
I was
missed
like, no, I don't want to know. If I do, that'll be magic. And if I don't, it's okay.
Oh man. Yeah, we did make a 69 nice joke, I think, on the 69th minute.
Of course.
Yeah, I mean it's required. It's
Yeah.
unfortunate that Dune Part 2 was not longer, because if you could do a 69th minute and then a 420th minute joke from the same movie, that would be
That's
really
true.
good.
I guess
Actually,
that's
between the two movies, are there 420 minutes? Like,
148 and
oh
158. So
no,
no,
rats. No,
if we
just
did
short.
credits,
Okay, well,
maybe.
have to wait for Messiah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, great. Yeah,
So
chosen one. Chosen one has come. 420th minute of Villeneuve Dune.
in the 70th minute, though, we are picking up on picking up at the end of the conversation between Ur-Lan and Gaius Helen Moheim. Now, Deez, I don't know about you, but I say Ur-Lan to pronounce the name. I think that's correct. I'm terrible at this, though, at pronunciation, so I may bounce around.
I've always been an Irulan person, but you know.
Whatever. It's all
Yeah,
made up
I
anyways.
also squarely fall in the Irulan camp. However, there is only one name that really merits discussion, I think, on this podcast. That
Rabbit.
is Rabin.
Okay, so where do you fall?
Oh man, wow, put me on the spot.
I
To
oh
be
yeah.
honest, I'm a Raban guy.
Yes.
It just feels right. But you know, to do a callback to a few episodes ago, I mean, I do not think it would be out of character for the Baron Vladimir Harkonnen to intentionally mispronounce his nephew's name just to
irk. You're a Harkonnen guy?
He's a purist. So listen, love it.
Here's the thing. I'm Harkonnen or Harkonnen. I'm either one. Although I think actually the better pronunciation is probably Harkonnen. But man, Harkonnen, that's like so ingrained in my brain from my youth. Watching this movie before I read the books and having no idea what was going on. that now it's like it's just hard to break.
That's fair.
I mean,
so yeah.
I gotta admit, the other night I was, you know, scrolling through my list of movies and everything and didn't know what to watch, so I settled on Dune.
As you do.
But I settled on the 84 director's cut of Dune, which is a good bit longer than the regular 84 Dune.
I was gonna say, is that the one that someone like spliced together on YouTube and like, ugh. There's one on there that's like an extended edition where like they basically cut everything and put it together. I can't remember. Sorry, I'm rambling. This is trust me, worth a watch if I can ever remember what it was called.
Yeah, no, it was beautiful. But yeah, hearing Harkonnen and Landstrad and all of these like really weird pronunciations for things just kind of sent me back a little bit, and I was like, oh man.
Yeah, Spice. It's like, where did you get Spice? No one calls it that. That's not really in the movie, everybody. If you're listening to this podcast, you probably know that was a joke.
So we're picking up between Irulan, whatever, and Gaius Helen Moheim. So at this point, Irulan is picking up on the Bene Gesserit's involvement in Arrakis. She's kind of putting all the pieces together just as they're doing a classic walk and talk through this.
We love a walk and talk. Walking and talking at a pretty brisk pace, too.
Yes, it's a sprint and talk almost.
Well, I wouldn't go so that far. Yeah. That far.
What's the mall walkers? Do you remember those people?
Speed walking. Yeah. So Zach and I used to work in a mall together. It's actually where we met.
Okay.
And we were our shift was basically the people that would like be at the store before the store would open to like, you know, get shit
like
ready
and
everything. You know, with us being there at 7 a.m. so we're all of the old people that would have their little, you know, 2-pound dumbbells, mm-hmm. and they would be speed walking in the mall.
They just do laps.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and that's what they're doing here.
Listen, more committed to health than I am, so no shade for me. But that said, I mean, you know, it would be, gotta imagine, like 15th time you walk past Bed Bath & Beyond or whoever. You gotta kind of be like, all right, guys, like, should really just go outside.
There was there's just a little group of them, and I always equated them to the chickens that we raised when I was growing up. It was just a little, you know, pack of chickens just walking around, you know, clucking at each other as they were walking around the wall. And I loved it. It was great. It's a great little community building thing. It was wonderful.
Where's the rooster that you used to hit with the tennis racket?
Only when he attacked me.
Wow. Oh, okay. Yeah. So, hello, Death. Yeah, no, I mean, honestly, like, it's such a, like, wholesome thing. Like, I love seeing people. I think one of the things that I really enjoy, sorry, I'm going to get a little meta here for just a second. I think one of the things that I really enjoy about the community is, like, especially with Dune, like, there are so many people who are so passionate about it. And it truly is, I think, like, one of the more wholesome fandom communities. At least that I've encountered. And I think I get so much joy even from seeing people who are into things that I'm not into being into those things with other people. And whether that's power walking through the mall or Dune or whatever, you know, it's like, there's just something really cool about that. That, you know, I think should be treasured.
I agree. I am a member of the, I'm a light to medium Star Wars fan. But I am maybe even bigger than Dune Star Trek fan.
Ooh. Okay.
Oh, you're absolutely bigger than Dune Star Trek fan.
Yeah.
Now, Parker, is
you
this
always
like...
have one of the series just going at all times in your house.
Is this like constantly like you're trying to figure out like how Riker is going to sit in each episode? Or
no,
is
I'm
this
always
like,
hoping he does his leg over the back of the chair. That's the power move. This is now a Star Trek podcast.
Again.
Yep, this is, yep, perfect. Welcome back, everyone. This is the Next Generation Minute podcast. Obviously, we're your hosts. This is episode 1 million
yeah, right.
of the TNG series.
TNGM?
Yeah. So are you now, is Trekkie, are we looking at that as a pejorative? Are you like a preferred Trekker person or is this a, like, okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah. I don't care. Perfect. I've never been outwardly called one of the, like either of those. Cause it is historically been something I've kept a little bit close to the chest until it gets brought up. And then people are like, oh, you know a lot about this. And I'm like, oh yeah. But
Duly noted.
Yeah. Okay. So I will most often get a Star Trek joke before I get a Dune joke, which is ironic, obviously, because I host a Dune podcast. But the Star Trek community is very polarizing. Sometimes there are some there's a level of toxicity in that I have not found in the Dune community, which at least yet. I'm sure they will rear their heads eventually, but I have not come across them, and I enjoy that.
I can't wait for the super rational and calm discussions that are going to happen when Messiah comes up.
Sure.
Well, yeah, it'll be healthy conversation. I mean, people, look, it's the internet, okay? People are on there to respect other people's opinions and broaden their own horizons, so why would it not be a really healthy, engaging conversation. I don't see another outcome. I don't.
Meanwhile, everyone that's read the books is like, that's the point, motherfucker.
Yeah. Yeah. As it turns out, he's the protagonist. He's not the hero. He's the protagonist.
Exactly.
So an important distinction.
So getting us back, I'm gonna be our rudders here and getting us back on track a little bit, but I love these tangents.
We'll see.
And let's have 500 more of them, please. so
yeah, can I jump in on the power walking part?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think so. We're coming into this scene. We've just watched Raban almost bite it on the back of an ornithopter. We've seen the Emperor asking Irulan on her advice on how to deal with quote-unquote profit. One of the things that I thought was really cool about this opening walking scene, when they're putting the camera on Notorious GHM, as she's walking, you can see her eyes because they're not as obstructed as they were in the first scene we meet her in Dune Part 1. Where her first words that she says to Paul are defiance is in the eyes, just like his father.
Yeah.
And so like she can tell a lot by looking at someone's eyes. And if you're watching her eyes in this scene, they are darting back and forth all over the place. Like it's obvious, like she's hearing that, okay, Irulan can read the tea leaves here. Like,
exactly. Yeah.
We gotta like, okay, we're gonna have to put a lid on this thing. And I just thought, you know, for sure, like, especially looking at how her eyes are handled in the Gamja Bar scene, like when you can see them, which is not the entire time, they are locked in on Paul. She knows exactly what she's looking for. And here, like, no, I think if the eyes are any indicator, like, I think this is the first time we see her rattled.
I would agree.
And it's,
yeah.
And it's a really like subtle, it's a nice way of showing, I think, how intuitive Irulan is, but also how serious the threat is of an emerging mystery leader of the Fremen.
I agree with that, and I'll talk on that just a smidge more here in just a second. But let's get there. So Irulan says, no, it's good. No, this is all leading into the same place. This is awesome. Erlan, she makes the remark on Muad'Dib and how it's an unusual name. And right after she says this, you know, she's walking ahead of Gaius, Helen, Moheim, and you can see the pieces being put together in her eyes. She's like clearly, you know, she has a physical reaction to this realization. And when she says, what if Paul Atreides were still alive? This is the moment where I think it really shows that Moheim is rattled.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the whole thing about the Bene Gesserit is that they planned for every outcome.
Yep.
But I don't think that this is an outcome that they planned for, and mm-hmm. she's only just now realizing, fuck, we overlooked this potential possibility, and now I have to come up with it. But also, I can't appear to Irulan like I'm rattled, so I have to mm-hmm. be a fucking hard-ass about this whole thing and just shut her up, so that way I look cool. Meanwhile, I now have 99 more problems to deal with. And this bitch certainly is one.
I thought too, like when Irulan comments on Muad'Dib as a name, I thought it was interesting that it doesn't feel like she quite alights on the cultural definition mm-hmm. of that, like as much as you might expect her to, because in the scene before this, like Gaius Helen Mahayim has said, Irulan is my most acute student, and it's not like she was her only student. Like, she also instructed Margo Fenring, who we'll learn later on, who's also a very impressive sister of the Bene Gesserit order. So I thought it was interesting that when Irulan is talking about it, she just translated it as kangaroo mouse, which is literally true. And she knows that it's a war name as opposed to his siege name. So she obviously has like some insight into the cultural nuance of naming in Fremen society, but she doesn't comment at all on what Stilgar tells us at the naming ceremony about how Muad'Dib is wise in the ways of the desert. He creates his own water constellation that points to the North Star. We call Muad'Dib the one who points the way. And I'm not sure, like, I just thought that was interesting. And I think it was maybe a way to like build tension there, or like show some development in their understanding of exactly what it could mean for the reveal a few seconds later when she asked the question point blank, what if Paul Atreides was still alive? But I noticed that, and I thought that was really interesting. There's so much packed in the first like 10 seconds of this scene.
Now you're understanding the world that we live in, where it's like, holy shit, there's so much to talk about.
Absolutely. Well, and I went back to the Dune Encyclopedia to see, like, is there something else about Muad'Dib that I'm missing? But there wasn't a whole lot in it that spoke to it, so I'm actually just using this as an excuse to flex that I own a physical copy of Dune Encyclopedia. So take that, nerds.
Well, okay, for flexing muscles, you got a softback or a hardback?
Oh, man, no. Well, it's a very adequate back, okay?
Some would say it's the perfect back.
Yeah,
it's got a really good personality, and it'll make you laugh, and like it'll make sure that like you're, you know, taken care of as well. Not like those other backs that are just assholes.
I'm not going to comment on whether it's a hard copy or a paperback. I'm just going to say that the copy of the Dune Encyclopedia that I own is more real than my Canadian girlfriend that I met at Bible camp in sixth grade that is totally real, but no one can meet her or talk to her because cell phones didn't exist yet. So, just going to say that, and we're just going to leave it there.
Going back to one of the things that you talked about that you picked up on as well, I think that, you know, kind of breaking some of the movie magic of this podcast here, or podcast magic, I suppose.
We do not record video for a reason, John.
Right. Well, last week's episodes that came out before this one today.
Yes.
One of the things you talked about, one of your beefs was that Irulan in no way, shape, or form was Gaius Helen Moheim's most acute student.
No, they described her as like a completely average student, which is why she
mid at best.
Which is why she was like manipulatable in the story. So, Yeah, when Moheim said she's one of my most acute students, my ears perked up. I was like, that's not right. Hang on a second. I agree that's how they're portraying her in the movies, but like that is a little bit of a departure from the book.
Yeah, that I felt the same way. I was like, in this cinematic interpretations universe of Dune, like I'm willing to put aside kind of the descriptions of her in the novels to mm-hmm. buy that. But I mean, I think you could also see a case where she's standing with the Emperor of the Known Universe. Like, probably not a good idea to call his daughter Mid right in front of him when he's already irritated.
Yo, your kid's Mid as fuck.
Yeah, someone's halting spice production on Arrakis. So
that's a good.
Yeah, I can also see the pragmatism of like, oh yeah, no, your daughter's great. But I'm for me, as I was interpreting the scene and watching the minutes, I was like, okay, yeah, I'm gonna accept that in this version she is.
Yeah.
Well, it's like how in this version, Chani is a way more independent and
skeptical. Of the religion person.
Well, I was going to say also just more thought out character.
Mm.
Yeah.
In terms of like, she thinks for herself, she acts for herself, you know, with the best interest of the Fremen in mind, but is not the, like we talked about with Alicia, oh, Paul Ussel. Like,
well, there's that in the books. There's that in the movies here too, but she is much more of an, like you said, like a fiercely independent character.
She's not a woman written in the 60s.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's very, very true.
Yeah.
Written by a man in the 60s.
Yeah.
let's get down to what it was.
And I think too, like Zendaya's ability to translate Villeneuve's kind of vision for the character onto the screen, like it's really cool. Like I really love Villeneuve Chani. Yeah. I think the book character is up clearly very important, but not nearly as interesting. And I think that casting decision in particular, like really, like it does such a good service to the character. This movie can't say enough nice things.
Yeah.
About Zendaya's performance, but she doesn't need to hear it from me.
Last thing we were talking about was how all of us came to the conclusion that Irulan is not GHM's most accused student.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. We were willing to put that aside for the sake of the movie's lore.
How Moheim like says this like, no, shut up, you don't know what you're talking about kind of like moment to Irulan. Do you have the full text?
Yeah. I'm just going to read the whole conversation. Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah. So minute starts. These are our own, say that five times fast. These are our own religious patterns, aren't they? This is our doing. Muad'Dib means kangaroo mouse, an unusual war name for a Fremen. And this is that notable pause that we talked about where she like stops and mentats herself into then saying, what if Paul Atreides were still alive? Enough. This must not come out even to your father's ears. Do you understand? I do, Reverend Mother. If Paul is alive, he likely knows the truth, and should the great houses learn your father was behind the liquidation of the Atreides, your father will face war and lose the throne. Then what hope is there? Hope? We are Bene Gesserit. We do not hope. We plan. Paul is not our only prospect. The Baron's youngest nephew, Fade Rautha Harkonnen, will inherit Arrakis.
Gotcha. So that part where she basically explains the plot of Dune Part 1. that looks like brand new news to Irulan. She's putting pieces together, but I don't think she put those pieces together.
Yeah.
But when Moheim is talking about like the ramifications of Paul being alive, I couldn't decide whether she actually thought he was alive, or maybe knew he was alive, or if she was really just fucking scared that he might be still alive. Because it would not be past the Bene Gesserit to have their little spiders everywhere reporting back to them. So she could possibly know that he is still alive, but she's keeping that super close to the chest. Or she's also put that together in her head and maybe is just coming to terms with it for the first time here.
I think it's more of the former.
Okay.
And the reason why I say that is because there are bits in upcoming minutes that will kind of lead us to the understanding that that's the case.
Okay.
Not to jump ahead.
No, it's fine. But please keep in mind, I have not seen this movie in its entirety since like March or a very long time from this, so I've forgotten a lot of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were a few things from this like this run of dialogue that I thought were interesting. I thought one, when she says, "This must not come out even to your father's ears," Irulan does not question that at all. Like, that is a crazy thing for her to say to the daughter of the emperor. Like, yeah, lie to your dad, who is the emperor of the entire known universe, if it comes up. And Irulan doesn't question it at all. It's just like, yep. Like, so I think, like, you also kind of get some insight into Irulan's commitment to the sisterhood.
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, absolutely. Like, no question. And I thought, too, there was some really cool light play with the Reverend Mother Mohaim's face here. When she says, "And should the great houses learn that your father was behind the liquidation of the Atreides," her face is shrouded in shadow there. And she's literally saying, like, your father was behind that. And that, I think that it almost feels like that came as news to Irulan. Like, Irulan's like, oh, snap. Yeah. Like, you know, what does that mean for us? And then, you know, you get this exposition later on, like, kind of laying it out for her. So I don't know if that was intentional or not. I would 100%, if you told me, like, yep, that was exactly how they wanted to shoot it, they wanted the dialogue to come out when the lighting looked like that, like, I would believe you. If it's just coincidence, it's so great. Like, I was just like, oh man, yeah, that rules.
Given everything we've talked about and everything we've come to learn about the cinematography and Denis Villeneuve's attention to, like, super insane tiny detail like that, that choreography with the lighting and with Mohaim, you know, doing the quick turnaround and being completely obscured, 100% planned and, like, blocked, like, way in advance. So, that's a very intentional, like, hide the face, you know, because that's what the Bene Gesserit do. Like, they literally hiding their faces as they, you know, scheme in the shadows.
Yep. Yeah.
So,
Also, did either of you guys find it ironic when she says your father will face war and will lose his throne because the great houses would turn against him? And that's, like, literally spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't seen the movie yet. That's, like, that's literally not what happens. It is the opposite of that. Like, all the great houses are like, nope, kill this usurper. Yeah. And no, I guess we'll find out in part three how that goes.
Not well.
Well, I was going to say, you know, if we can speculate ahead a little bit, I don't think they're going to adopt that plot line at all. Because I think they already would have dropped hints at that if they were going to do it. Now, they could do what they've done for plenty of other things here and just introduce it in another form or fashion. But as it stands right now, they're not pointing the way towards that plot line.
It's so important for Messiah, though.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I agree, but there's also a lot of super important things that were left out of these movies.
Yeah.
Don't do this to me.
Oh, wait a minute. I guess we should have checked on this before we started taping. Are you guys Aaliyah or Aaliyah?
I bounce back and forth. I think I mostly go with Aaliyah.
Aaliyah. Yeah.
Yeah, same here. Okay. Oh, great. Okay. Well, perfect. Hey, we're batting 1,000 on that name. Good job, guys. We agreed on one. You know, like, not having her in this movie, considering, like, the outsized role she plays in this part of the books, you know, I thought that was an interesting decision, too. And I wasn't sure how I was going to react to that. And I was perfectly fine with it. Like, by the time I was that was great. Like,
I don't know if you're up to date on our theory about Aaliyah.
Ooh. Maybe not.
Ooh.
So,
because Alicia's episodes haven't been released yet, so no, not fully.
Yeah. Well, I mean, some of our episodes with our theory have come out at this point.
Is this the, like, all, are you, I think you guys mentioned, like, you're wondering if Alia hasn't, like, pretty much, like, taken over Jessica at this
At
point. Like,
times, yeah,
she's.
not fully taken her over, but at times of like religious fervor or any kind of discussion, Alia is effectively speaking through Jessica instead of doing their weird like mother unborn daughter like telepathy thing.
Okay. Full disclosure, I meant to, after I listened to, I forget what minute it was, but after I heard that, I found that so fascinating and cool. I meant to DM you on Blue Sky, like, this is dope. I'm gonna rewatch the movie, which I'm in the middle of doing, with that kind of in mind and looking forward. So I'm 1,000,000% on board with that theory. Like,
Yeah, it comes to a head like super crazily when we have our conversations with Alicia about it, because I think she pointed out some stuff that we hadn't even
Oh,
like
for sure.
considered too. So yeah.
Oh, yes, let's
And
go.
guess what? It's only going to get weirder as the movie goes on. So buckle up.
Right. I'm keeping us back on
You
track.
know, when my
Yeah, Zach gets to edit these episodes,
I'm
so
keeping us on track. Hang on, hang on. We
Oh,
got 4 more
that's
days to
fair.
talk.
That's fair. That's fair. That's fair. Yep.
I don't mind
Yeah, I
releasing
can't believe I get to spend a whole week with you guys. It's like,
Well, I think
it's
John's got a
cool.
guest bedroom, so.
Yeah. Hope you're not allergic to cats.
I am not.
All right,
Yeah,
cool.
you're good then. We get the line, the super cold line, "We are Bene Gesserit, we do not hope, we plan." Love that. And then I immediately went back over to Star Wars and I said, "Hope, rebellions are built on hope," because I just got done watching Andor. And then we get the plot of basically the second chapter of the movie, which is Fade Rautha is the next prospect. And John's already went through the dialogue, so I won't repeat any of that, but I did want to talk a little bit about Fade. It's the first time we get a name drop for Fade Rautha in the movies, at least.
Not played by Sting in this version.
Unfortunately, not played by Sting. I think that would have been hilarious to bring him back to play a 17-year-old.
He could have done it. He's got the range. He could have done
He's still sinewy like he was in the
Yeah.
in '84.
Oh, God. Being described as sinewy.
Was he not? Am I
No,
wrong?
he was, but like, ugh.
I just want to say one thing. You mentioned that you said the hope we are Bene Gesserit, we do not hope we plan. And you said that's a cold line. And I would just like to say verbatim in my notes, I have that line written down. And the next thing after it is, geez, that line is cold. So props to you. We're vibing there on that one.
I had some prescience, as David says, and I looked into your notes into the future.
Found a way.
Wow, okay. Well, then I have some
Neuropathy.
serious cybersecurity gaps that have been brought to my attention today.
So, Fade Rautha, interesting dude, and we'll get to know him a lot more this week.
We get to know him a lot more tomorrow.
That's true. But just a little bit of backstory on Fade. He is the youngest nephew of the Baron and brother to Raban, which I have to admit, this was a little bit of a gap in my not necessarily my knowledge, but just how I'm remembering this. So Beast Raban's name obviously is not his first name is not Beast, it's Glassow. Glassu, Glassow, whatever.
Glasso.
Glasso.
Yeah, there's I'm
Okay,
sure there's a hundred different ways
we're
to say
batting zero on that one.
that
So we swept Alia, but we're zero for Glasso Raban. Okay, yeah, that's great.
So Raban is the family name in this case. The father of Glassow, I'm just gonna say Glassow, and Fade is a name that's a little bit familiar to us from, I believe it was a summer school episode, Abelard.
Abelard.
Abelard, thank you.
Yeah.
Abelard Raban, who in according to the books, is the current Count of Lankavale. So we get another name, a mention of Lankavale from Dune Prophecy, or I guess Dune Prophecy took it from this, whichever you however you want to look at that. But they were basically adopted by the Baron, and because Fade was favored, I guess. He was just the favorite of the nephews there. His last name was changed to Harkonnen instead of Raban. So we get the differentiation between the two brothers here.
Classic Vladimir move. Only give one of them the last name.
Which, I mean, honestly goes, it kind of plays into your theory, John, of Vladimir just fucking with people's names.
Well, hold on. No, that's not my theory. That's Deez's theory.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. No, you're right. Yeah. Sorry. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. That is 100%.
Put some fucking respect on that shit, dude.
Yeah, that's,
he offends to be offensive.
Yep. That line from Moneo, like, sorry, real spoiler alert for when we inevitably get a screen adaptation of God Emperor. Please didn't even hear me when I say that.
I said that should be left to the animated that should just be like a really good animated series.
I'm in. Whatever it takes to get God Emperor to the screen is really all I care about. At that point, I can hang up my my maker hooks and call it a day.
Just let me see the gross protuberance.
We need on-screen beef swelling.
Oh, no. I'm offended. I mean, the dole. But yeah, I think that was like such a great callback from Frank to give us that additional context. Like, he's almost kind of begging you to go back and like look at the Baron from this perspective. Everything he does to offend, because he just likes offending people. And it's like, oh man, yeah, like, oh, so good.
Well, we get to see the Baron a little bit later this week in quite an offensive position. So let's go ahead and get to that. John, any notes from Art and Soul?
Nothing for today. We'll have a little bit for tomorrow and the rest of the episodes, I believe. So we'll dive into those when it's more relevant.
Okay.
So,
Deez, any notes to, before we wrap up today?
Ooh, not for me, although I will say that this minute ends on a real real cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm.
Now tune in tomorrow.
That's right. Well, as always, you can find us and our guests online. You can find us on Blue Sky at DuneMinute.com, and you can find our guest at Muad'Dib Atreides. And is it spelled Atreides D-E-E-Z, or is it just regular Atreides?
Two E's, one Z, baby.
Either way, we're going to have it in the description as well for the episode. Go follow D's Nuts. Oh, it's, God, this is never going to get
it's
old.
It's so dumb. It's my favorite thing.
Go follow D's. Dude, I was pretty early in the Blue Sky train and everything and like trying to like find other Dune creators and other Dune people in the community, and like as soon as I saw your name, I was like, fuck yeah. Dude,
I honestly could not believe it was still available. Like, I was like, really, no one took this just feels like so obvious. And there are other Atreides Nuts on Blue Sky, but like no one, at least that's like super active with the handle. I was like, oh man, that rules. Because my objective, like with anything, if it's like an ID photo, if it's a handle, like, I want it to be as stupid as humanly possible. Like, I want people to look at it and go, that is so dumb. And, you know, I feel like I really, like, I made the grade on this one.
Well, mission accomplished.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can find us at DuneMinute.com, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch with us. We will be back tomorrow with another episode of the Dune Minute.
All right. See you then.
See ya.
See you tomorrow. We'll